Welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Time Security Podcast Series. My name is Ian Murphy. My guests today are Nilima Rastagi, Senior Director of Product Management, Palo Alto Networks, and Deirdre Smith, Senior Vice President, Global Security Services at NTT Limited. We're going to talk about security, orchestration, automation, and response. Nilima and Deirdre, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ian. I am Senior Director of Products for XOR and joined Palo Alto Networks as part of the Demisto acquisition, where I was one of the first PMs to start working on the product. In my day-to-day job, I talk to a lot of customers and define how the product features on the XOR side are going to serve our customers.
Hello, Ian. I'm accountable for our global services related to our security division of NTT. Beyond making each of the services that NTT offers more efficient and leading edge, it's really important to respond to our client requirements. That's the focus is of my job on a day-to-day basis, understanding where the market is going, understanding the client demand, and making sure that our services align to those expectations so that we can ensure that we meet those asks of a growing market.
It's a market that's changing rapidly. And one of the challenges for many organizations is pulling together all those different strands of their cybersecurity solutions. It's a complex process. To get practical information out of all the solutions they have, they already use solutions such as SIEM, Security Information and Event Management. But over the last few years, we've seen a shift towards SOAR, Security Orchestration, Automation and Response. What is driving that change?
What I'm seeing at the moment is, for us at least, the drivers were fairly straightforward. From a SOC as a service perspective, there are multiple SIEM vendors out there. There are disparate event types and categorizations. Each SIEM solution comes with its own single pane of glass, its own dashboards, and there are lots of device management IP blocks. There is analytics automation, but each of those are disparate and related to that particular solution. As we move forward, there are more and more SIEM vendors coming into the market. And clients are really asking for a single service view. They're asking for single alerting streams. They're asking for collaboration, putting together the threat intelligence as well, so that we can aggregate those disparate views for ourselves into a single pane of glass. With more complexity, there's also the need to drive rationalization. It's important for us to be able to perform the R in SOAR, which is the enhanced response in all categories. That's really what we're seeing clients drive from a future service perspective. And that's what we should all be aspiring to respond to.
I agree with Deirdre. When we started the Demisto journey, we interviewed many, many customers exactly in this way. A lot of them are running their own SOC. In that scenario, what we saw was most of them were struggling with tons of alerts that were coming in the SIEM. The SIEM was aggregating it well, but many of them had 10,000 to 30,000 alerts coming in a week, given the attack surface of the enterprises increasing and increasing. With the number of tools that they had to go into to actually resolve one alert was causing the analyst a lot of burning out. Most of the organizations would have the analyst churn every 9 months to 12 months. That is where we understood that we have to, first of all, make the response systematic. And then we also wanted to make it a little bit of fun because it's deep work responding to the alerts. You want to take the manual complexities of grunt work out. That's why we moved towards the automation aspects, where you can automate simple things which the analyst skill set is not required for. The whole idea behind SOAR is also that you don't automate everything. You automate pieces which make a lot of sense for simple automations and from a response perspective, but the deep work of investigation still stays with the analyst.
You're absolutely right about that. The truth of the matter is that you want to be in a position where your analysts aren't doing the grunt work, as you called out. So they're not just going to monitor and alert. You want to take them into the space where they'll become monitor, act, alert. that's really what for us is a key driver when the clients come to us. Ultimately, as you said earlier, there are a ton of alerts, a ton of grunt work here. If we can increase the base level capability so that analysts are spending time on doing the real intelligent threat hunting, because the response piece has been automated to a large extent, it really does lead to greater client satisfaction. But more importantly, analysts feel like they're doing something more meaningful and they can drive full threat intelligence into analytics.
How much of that is also a response to the complexity of that relationship between SOC and the client? We've always had the ability to give them information. We've always passed them intelligence on what we see. What we haven't always done is pass them actionable intelligence. But we're reaching a point where many of them, even if we give them a playbook through actionable intelligence, aren't really in a position to utilize that. Are you seeing that automation and response being something that customers want you to do for them?
Absolutely. When we looked at this, we looked at it from a client perspective, from the outside in, taking into account the asks from our clients, which is really making sure that our services are more efficient. We have to make sure that the benefits have to be maintained to the clients. They're interested in our response actions. There is intense client and market demand for that. They are looking for greater value proposition with lower costs of the overall services. We know that they're looking for the response for the monitor act alert part. We know that they want actionable intelligence. We said, okay, how do we implement this internally? How do we find a product that gives us the ability to achieve those client outcomes? When we looked at the market and we tried to find a solution, we looked at what we could do that would meet the requirements, but also give us the ability to do some of the things we needed to do to take out that manual repetitive task. We moved all our analytics into a single SOAR environment. We created a common interface from which to work with incidents. That means you have things like common processes, common playbooks, common field names, and a common language for discussing the incidents that we work with. That common language means that our analysts can work with multiple incident types without a specialized understanding of the underlying technologies. I mentioned earlier that we have more and more SIEMs out there. We cannot train our analysts on every possible SIEM solution out there. Taking this approach, we have that ability to work multiple incident types without that requirement. We also looked at our playbooks and we looked at the best way to approach that. The solution that we chose had to give us the ability to reduce the amount of analyst time spent manually performing those repetitive tasks like researching indicators or performing drill downs. If those tasks are taken away and performed automatically in the background, that means when your analyst does set eyes on an incident, they have all the data they need to make a confident determination around the activities that they've observed. That allows you to increase productivity, and it also improves the quality of our alerts and our responses as well. The end result is that the client gets a timely, validated, enriched notification, and then your team can respond quicker and more confidently. And that also ensures quite a small impact on your daily operations as well.
From our perspective, from a product perspective, the reason was also because we know that adversaries are using automation to advance threats. The automation is just not on the defender side. It's also on the attacker side. We know that employing more and more automation will be necessary to properly defend against the threats in the near future of security operations. The other way that we have seen is that it's absolutely important to use automation to scale to reduce the complexities of addressing those very sophisticated use cases. What happens is that in the first year of adopting the automation, you address the table stakes use cases. Once you have a baseline, then you can start doing real good magic of addressing very, very sophisticated use cases with automation. That's how you keep on building IP and address those advanced threats.
It's true. It also gives us the ability to focus on creating those use cases specifically for different market verticals as well, so that it's contextual your responses in the context that the client operates in, which is fantastic.
One of the things I'd like to pick up first, and I'll come back to automation because I think there's a lot of complexity in that, is you mentioned there, Deirdre, that you were pulling from Seam into SOAR. A lot of the conversations I have as an industry analyst, a lot of the pitches to me are that SOAR is a replacement for Seam, that companies should be aspiring to get rid of their Seam systems because they're old and dated and go to SOAR because it adds more capabilities. How much of a mix are you seeing of your customers saying, okay, we are going to go to SOAR and do a replacement? And how much of this is that SOAR sits above Seam as a super importer of data?
That's an interesting question, and it depends on the industry. We're seeing some clients going into the SOAR space wanting to go either directly to SOAR or wanting to put SOAR out there as an aggregator, but they don't have many solutions. So I'm not entirely sure how quickly they see the value of that super important layer. When you look at Seam and what it's meant to do, it's really supposed to give you two big outcomes, reports and alerts. Those reports aggregate and display the incidents and events. And effectively, those alerts trigger if the tool's analysis engine detects any violations of a rule set. That's how you effectively signal a security issue. The benefit of that is that you get a better ability to identify quickly and to respond fairly quickly because your data is aggregated, your data is normalized. There is some improvement in your ability to do threat detection faster, to meet the compliance requirements, and to do some normalization. That's perfectly fine, and all companies have some need to do that. Unfortunately, I think a lot of clients confuse Seam and SOAR, and I suppose it's just because of where we're at in the market right now. SOAR is just a different approach altogether to security operations, because you integrate existing tools and applications. It gives us the ability to do more, like workflow. It also helps us to reduce time from discovering a breach to the point that we can actually respond and resolve. There's more to SOAR. Clients are still getting to grips with SOAR because it's a little more complex. It's got orchestration, automation, and response, and those different pillars need to be used in concert if you want to do incident response and management appropriately. So it does a lot more. From a core function and capability perspective, Seam tools are mainly there for data storage, for threat intelligence, for analysis and aggregation. But unfortunately, that's not all we need. We need a little more than that, and that's where SOAR comes in. That whole workflow can be automated fairly quickly, and the automation is so crucial to our ability to respond quickly.
If I can add a layer of how Palo Alto Networks looks at this, in the SOC, there are two really great important functions. One is, how do you become good at detections? And that's the same approach for XDR, where we are trying to automate the detection piece. If you think about data flowing into the SOC as a data pipeline, just automating the detection flow well expands that data pipeline dramatically. That's where we see a lot of our customers struggle, because when they deploy SIM, they spend a year and a half just deploying SIM and understanding detections on that data. From our approach perspective, we say that as you go in, you need to have an XDR approach where the detections are getting stitched by your detection source automatically. Then, as Deirdre mentions, once the detection magic has happened, there is definitely a response part to it, because no matter how good you become at detections, there is going to be a very enterprise-specific response approach. That's where I think the SOAR pieces come in, because the detections are fast and the response is fast. You are basically at adversary speed. That's where we are spending a lot of time on in our SOAR tool, on how do we become better at responding from an orchestration perspective, from an automation in playbooks perspective. We also see some of the other vendors having the same approach. But what happens is either the SIM takes over or the SOAR takes over in that toolset. It's very important to understand both these approaches need to have a very, very good focus to get the best out of the SOC.
I think that's a really good point.
We're pulling in information that's already been aggregated. One of the challenges of being as accurate as we can in finding everything about a threat is having as close to raw source before we start our analysis. So how careful or how complex does that orchestration become when you've got so many different sources that have already been curated?
This is exactly why, Ian, we are very clear that we are not a SIEM. To some extent, that's the job that's expected out of SIEM, that when you are getting a detection, the correlation of whatever threat intel has flown into the SIEM and the other sources has compacted and we are getting a detection which has enough information. Now, what happens in SOAR is that once we get the detection, to respond, you still need to go back to these sources sometimes to get more current data. For example, an IP when the detection happened might have been bad, but now when you're responding and if the response has been going on for a month, you may find more IPs or more domains which are interesting in that attack. That's when you go to these other tools and do more enrichment. From a context perspective, if we think about all these tools, the context keeps moving. You have the detection cycle and then you have the response cycle. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but going back to these tools is an ongoing exercise that needs to be done throughout the cycle because the data is also moving.
You are answering it and you're answering the question that I asked earlier, which is where do we see this sitting in a chain? What's becoming clear here is actually they're all part of the greater chain.
That's true. To Nilima's point, SIEM and SOAR basically use the same type of data, logs and events. Even the variety of sources they collect data from, the amount of data typically that they collect obviously differs significantly. And where they collect the data from is different. SIEM tools gather data from logs, hosts, infrastructure, tools, malware detection, prevention systems. SOAR is slightly different. They can integrate a big variety of sources, even external applications. They can collect great amounts of data. They can collect different sources, but more importantly, types of data. So different categories, as I mentioned earlier. There's a place for both, but SOAR really is about the automation and our ability to take those large amounts of data from large varieties of sources and help us to respond a lot quicker. There's a place for both of them. It just depends on what your goal is.
That brings us back to this whole discussion about automation. If we look at the wider automation discussion out there, there seems to be an assumption that a lot of the automation is about replacing people, or at the very least, taking away a lot of the day-to-day work. But how we put that automation in is still quite questionable. Is it done through machine learning and AI engines? Is it done by better scripting? If we look at SecDevOps, we don't see an awful lot of engagement from security teams building their own pipelines in that DevOps process to apply the security components. When you're talking to people about automation, how broad a church are they really dealing with? Or are people still very myopic in terms of what automation means?
I'll take that one. For the last 4 years, it's changed a lot. As you think about any new technology that gets introduced in the SOC or in the security organization, a lot of the work that vendors have to do is also about educating the value of that technology brings to the SOC. Most importantly, what also you need to educate is the kind of talent you need to maintain that technology in the SOC. For example, SIEMs have detection engineering in the SOC. Exactly the same. When we started evangelizing SOAR, we say that you do need a person who at least understands one kind of automation scripting technology. We can give you all kind of content in the technology, in the SOAR tool. But if any vendor is telling you it's completely no code, they are completely lying. You do need to change the scripts in some form or manner because every SOC we go in is different because of the people and processes, even if the tools are same. That's where you need to do the tweaking. So to answer your question, Ian, you do need some kind of expertise to make the most of the technology. There is enough out of box to get you started. But after that, when you morph it for your own organization, you definitely need some expertise there.
It's about people, processing, and tools. With our people, processes, and tools working together with shared skills towards a common outcome, there is no way this can be successful. That's the point around DevSecOps.
But if we wind that automation slightly further out, a lot of organizations are reconsidering the role of a level one SOC analyst. How much of that can be automated? How much of it frees that analyst up to be dealing with specific functions which are customer facing in helping deal with response and remediation? How much of that sits within the SOAR tool? How much of that is about additional automation that we bring in through the other tools that we tend to have in the SOC?
I'm not sure I can answer the percentage question, but I can say that level one analyst role for us is certainly long gone. We have integrated multiple teams as a result of SOAR. It gives us the ability to cross-train people with specific capabilities and broaden their skills base. That's a big deal for us because it allows us to quickly upskill people as well by taking out the grunt work. And it really does empower people to be able to work in a new space, learn new skills really quickly, and give them the capacity to do so by taking away some of the basics through automation.
All I can say is that we are seeing in our customer base, a lot of tier one analysts are actually becoming tier two and tier three. It's very interesting. It's not the person, it's the level of information that the tools and the organization provides to the person to qualify them as a tier one versus tier two.
Absolutely.
As SOAR is moving in, or as they are getting access to good information and tools, the skill set is automatically moving.
So how do we bring new people in? Because if we're now automating what we would have seen just 2-3 years ago as a level one SOC analyst, and we're moving people's skills forward, we run a risk of an increasing skills gap between those entering the industry that we're bringing into our SOC and those who are already established in the SOC. Is this where tools like SOAR smooth that transition for them? Or is there another path that we need to take in order to get the basic set of skills for people to be comfortable?
It's a combination of both. Initially, we had level ones through four in our SOCs, and we had them working based on the capability and the skill set that they came with. So, for example, device management, enterprise service monitoring, etc. What SOAR gives us the ability to do is bring those people in, regardless of the discipline they come in with, and very quickly multi-skill them to work across those different services fairly quickly. After that, they can choose whether they want to specialize in a particular discipline, because that's when you get to level three and level four. It allows them the ability to go and do deeper problem solving, work in the response space, and do a whole different level of threat hunting. For us, it's actually helped us enormously in giving people more options and more opportunities to grow. We built a certification and enablement framework around our ability to do that. It gives people so much more opportunity to learn, and they learn a lot faster, because they don't need to know the nitty-gritty about everything. They need to focus on the threat hunting, and that's what's key for them.
I completely agree, and I think the playbooks aspect of it, or the workflow aspect of it, actually helps a lot. It visualizes the learning path to some extent for the onboarding new analyst. It's just easier for them to understand the processes, because when someone onboards into a new flow, the first couple of months are just understanding how things connect with each other. And giving that workflow out, having older incidents or older tickets which have run of those playbooks, help a lot of the analysts onboard the tools much faster.
Absolutely. Our playbooks definitely reduce the amount of time analysts spend on manually performing those basic repetitive tasks they're spending more time on looking at what happens when you see an incident. Do you have all the data you need to confidently make a decision and to respond appropriately? It changes the way we look at things, because faster time to automation just eliminates time spent on tasks that are not meaningful.
That use of playbooks is interesting. If I look at big organizations, that conversation of having playbooks for incident response and playbooks for wargaming comes up regularly. It's a topic that's understood by the board, as well as people in the security function and other parts of the business. They get a buy-in very quickly. But at mid to small-sized enterprises, playbooks really don't come into play very often. How much do you find that the fact that playbook is an integral part of SOAR works for both your own analysts when they're going out there to help customers, but also for customers to suddenly realize that any response has to be a company-wide integrated response, not making one or two people stay until midnight to find out what went wrong?
That's an interesting point you make. Traditionally, that has been the case. We've had people sitting there putting in the hours trying to figure out what's going on. The truth of the matter is, when we can show clients that, because we're all speaking a common language, because we see things in the same way, we're not getting lost in the detail. We don't have to have the detailed understanding of the underlying technologies. We can respond faster and we can talk to them in a language they understand as well. It does make all the difference. And when they see that, I think most of our clients have seen the increase in productivity as well. More importantly, they see that the quality of the alerts is better. That's an easy conversation to have.
From a vendor perspective, Neelima, how much commonality can you create with playbooks? For example, can you expand the playbook library in such a way as playbooks become templates, so that when I get a new alert, a new threat, a new incident, I can pull a set of standard responses together into a new playbook and immediately begin to react?
I want to highlight here how we did that for SolarWinds recently. We have a library of about 500 plus playbooks, which are a combination of mini steps as well as guidance playbooks, like how do you respond to a phishing alert. Some of them can be used as a templates, because a phishing response in an organization is going to be about people and process. So it's a template we provide. But responding within that, for example, if you own XDR or any other tool, responding or blocking something in that tool is not a template. It's something you can use as is. For SolarWinds, we published a response in 1.5 days with a very good playbook, with a number of tools. Within a week, we made a breach response pack where we are updating new possibilities of catching more and more stuff as things are coming to light. From a vendor perspective, it's very important for the customer to understand how much are they supporting in providing these templates out of box and how fast are they supporting that. If it takes you 4 months to give a template or a response out, by that time, that means the organizations using that tool have to figure it out themselves.
Deirdre, you sit as poacher and gamekeeper here. You're both customer at one side of using Cortex XSOAR, but on the other side, you're a service provider providing that forward for customers. How do you build your playbooks? How much of that comes from your own experience of the things that you have to deal with as a company? How much of that can you aggregate from what you see hitting all of your customers? And how do you then refine that to give each customer the set of playbooks they need?
It's an interesting question. When we first started out on the journey, as with all teams, everybody wanted to develop their own playbooks, because if it wasn't invented here or by me, then it can't be any good. Every engineer behaves in exactly the same way. Because we have so many SOCs across the world and we're looking essentially for a speed of response and greater consistency and better efficiencies, the only way we could achieve that was by having reusable playbooks and using templates. The truth is that the SOC team has to have a playbook. If we all start out with a standard template, then we're in a good position to at least create some consistency. But we need playbooks that can pivot, and we need to be able to change them because at the end of the day, a playbook is just a playbook. We have to be able to adapt them based on the intelligence that we bring and the new discoveries that we bring. Probably 60% of what you need is a template. The other 40% is the intelligence that we bring to the table. That's what essentially allows us to action in the context of the client.
That brings us to response quite neatly, doesn't it? Because customers want it done for them today, and quite rightly so. They lack the skills, they lack the knowledge, they lack the funding to compete in the market for those very skilled security analysts. How much have playbooks increased your ability to respond? And how much does SOAR change the whole response environment?
Playbooks certainly make a massive difference in our ability to respond because it gives us the ability to be efficient. It gives us the ability to be consistent when we're running multiple teams on multiple continents. It gives us the ability to speak to the client in the same language, because at the end of the day, an incident is an incident is an incident. But an incident in the context of the education sector versus the finance sector is a very different thing. Depending on the industry, they have different regulations, different definitions of compliance. And that's really important for us to be able to take into account. That's what those playbooks give us the ability to do. Basics, we all have the basics in place. But then to take that enhanced view based on what we see in the different verticals is what creates the differentiation for us, but also gives us a common language to have the discussion with the client around. That's more important than anything else, that common interface from which we operate. It makes a difference because it means we can work a lot faster. We can work on multiple incidents at the same time. And again, no specialized understanding required.
What about forensics? One of the things that's often ignored when we deal with an incident is that of the after report forensics, because everybody is often running around trying to find out what went wrong, fix what went wrong, get the company up and running. We tend to lose a lot of that key data that we need down the line. Do playbooks give you the ability to build in the forensics to the response, or are they just another part of that action?
It's my perception right now that that integration into forensics is still fairly immature. The playbooks help us to do the quick determination, quick response. The forensics we tend to do after the fact, bringing that back into the playbooks, back into the context of the vertical in which we're operating, still needs a bit of work and a bit of maturing. The industry's not quite there yet. We still have some work to do to close that loop and make it a lot tighter between the respective teams, because the focus is quite different, obviously, but we do need to bring it a lot closer together.
Neelima, when do we start to see that change of focus from a vendor perspective?
I agree with what Deirdre mentioned. When we talk about the maturity side of things there, it's also about the forensics tools' capability to connect with other tools. Given that these tools are deployed in such a critical conditions, I think getting access to the data and storing that data is most important than figuring out how we can parse and automate that data. I believe from the tools that I've seen, they are still figuring out how to do that collection pieces and the art of doing that well. Once they are at that point, if you think about the orchestration tools, the tools have to integrate with APIs to get access to that data set, either through a forensics tool or directly through that machine. Most of those environments are segregated by the time they become of interest for the forensics teams. I see the challenge in that area more because SOAR tools do need you to be connected in some form or manner to get the context. If we see the tools are connected, then we have seen a couple of customers do forensics as well. In forensics, for example, just getting the whole machine's image back into the SOAR tool, you need a very different kind of scale at the back end. And then to parse that data out of that image, you need a different set of skills. It's more of a forensics tools maturity than the SOAR pieces. As soon as that comes in, we will start seeing that trend. To give you a relative example, We are now slowly seeing the capability of SOAR driving towards DevSecOps. You alluded to it earlier. We are seeing the maturity of the tools on that side evolve, and that's how SOAR is now coming into that. That's how it's going to apply into forensics as well.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Following an incident, the procedures for post-incident activity need to really drive the ongoing improvements back into the playbooks. It's really closing that loop where I think the maturity isn't quite there yet for all the reasons that Neelima just mentioned. But it's definitely improving.
So this is the part of the podcast where I ask people for three reasons why. So what I'm going to do now is, Neelima, ask you for three reasons why, from a vendor's perspective, people should be moving towards SOAR. And Deirdre, from your side, three reasons as a customer and a service provider why you're adopting SOAR.
Okay, so reason one, SOC should be thinking about it because you are inundated with alerts. Automating the response for those alerts is going to improve the SOC efficiency. The second reason is you're dealing with 10 to 20 tools minimum at any given point of time. Orchestrating these tools will give your analyst a lot of time to do real work. The third reason is implementing automation in the SOC is going to give you returns in your risk posture. At the end of the day, the tools you buy are the reason for keeping your organization secure, and deploying automation in several ways is going to really help improve your risk posture.
From a consumer perspective, it's important for us to have a single service view across our clients and the SIEM vendors out there. It's equally important for us to have single alerting streams. We desperately need the automation in order for us to be efficient, consistent, and more importantly, to be able to do the response part. From a client perspective, clients are absolutely reliant on the fact that response is what they need most of all. They're expecting that service at a lower cost, and they're expecting the Monitor Act alert from us as service providers. They have an enormous amount of device types and applications in their environment, and they need somebody to own the integration and to give them the ability to act appropriately. That's what SOAR gives them the ability to do.
There's a whole bunch of this I need to go away and think about, because I've got so many other questions I could have asked you both today. Thank you very much.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian. Always entertaining to hear different perspectives.